This episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Loot Crate. Head over to lootcrate.com/warrocketajax and use the coupon code WARROCKETAJAX to get $3 off a new subscription.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax, to bring back his body.
And welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts for today's program, and every program, almost. Not all of them. I leave sometimes. Matt, you leave sometimes. But most of the time, it's us.
Caveat City up in here.
Matt, take me down to Caveat City. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, my co-host, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how you doing tonight, besides pretty critical?
I don't mean to nitpick, but and you're right, we're not always here. But we're always here in spirit, and we're both here this week for an amazing show.
Yes, the show is amazing. That is false. I am never here in spirit. I am always elsewhere.
You're always in the Cozumel, back on the cruise.
I'm always back on that cruise life. We got a great show for you today, everybody. We're going to be talking to Cat Blacker, Doug Banks, and Tony Baldini about Lightning Dogs, which is a fascinating project that started on a podcast and is now spiraling into something more. It's really cool, and it's really fun to hear about, so that interview is going to be awesome, and I cannot wait to get to it. But first, Matt, we've got a lot to talk about. We got a lot of Ajax business to get through.
We do, and let's start with thanking our newest supporters on Patreon.
These are the people that have gone to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they're kicking in as little as $1 a month to help us keep the lights on and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. Who do we have this week, Matt?
We have a good many new pledgers to War Rocket Ajax. Chad Wago is one of them.
Oh, thank you, Chad.
Former member of the Hundo Club back in those days.
Ooh.
Matt Smith is...
Oh, thank you, Matt.
Someone else who has pledged. And Isabel McMahon.
Thank you, Isabel.
Those are our newest supporters on Patreon. We want to thank them again for helping us out. If you would like to help us out on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/warrocketajax. And kick in as little as $1 a month. If you do that, you will get ad-free episodes of the show and art that only our Patreon supporters get to see, and so on and so forth. At higher levels, backers can get bonus audio. They can get line stepper privileges for our Every Story Ever and panel president lists and for asking listener questions. And at even higher levels, there's even more stuff. Once tax season is behind us, taxes, am I right? Once that's behind us, I'll be putting together a new T-shirt for our supporters at that level, and we'll have our 2017 T-shirt. So lots going on with Patreon, and thank you again to everybody who helps us out there.
We have had some quality bonus content of late. If you haven't heard the bonus content that we have, just recently we did an hour about the cruise, and we did an extended version of the Impossible Comics trivia game with Greg Schiegel that is legitimately one of my favorite things we have ever done on the podcast.
We have a library of hours of bonus content, and if you back at that level, you get access to that entire library of bonus content. So go check that out if you can help us out.
Speaking of favorite things that we've done on the podcast, that's the second little bit of business that we have. I am still putting out the call for people's favorite bits so that we could try and compile a best of episode that would maybe help out new listeners. We've heard a lot about us talking to Kyle Starks about Jungle Gems, the magical fairy tale grocery store.
Let me add something to that.
Okay.
Because ultimately what we want for like a best of episode is a series of bits, a series of little sound bites from various episodes, you know, over the 342 episodes we've done, plus, you know, other Every Story Ever specials and other stuff that's not numbered. So, you know, hours and hours and hours and hours of stuff. It can't be an entire interview with somebody. I mean, even the Jungle Gyms thing is probably...
That is about 20 minutes long.
I don't think it's quite 20 minutes long, but it's maybe on the longer side of what we would want to include. This might be asking too much, but if you can think of like a little 10-minute bit, 5-minute bit, 2-minute bit that is one of your favorite moments from the show, then try to narrow it down to that. We can't include the entire interview with Chip where we talked about Garfield, right? Even though I, you know, that's one of my favorite things we've done. A better bit to include would maybe be the bit where Chip is just naming all the places you can find him online and just listing off real and made up porn sites. I don't know if we made this very clear the first time we put this out, but we kind of want to make them short, bite-sized clips that we can pull from various episodes and then, you know, make a big salad of War Rocket Ajax introductory content.
Do you think salad is the appropriate metaphor there, Matt? Like, I'm not trying to call you out. I think most people would have gone with like a stew or a gumbo.
They're all food items that where you mix shit together.
I feel like maybe that needs to be the first bit in the War Rocket Ajax best of. One final bit of business before we go any further. Do you hear that, Matt? Do you hear that percolating?
What's that sound
going on? Do you hear that coffee brewing?
That drip, drip, drop.
That drip, drip, drop of all that coffee brewing? Because we're going to Coffee City.
We sure are.
That's what I call Seattle now, and I think it's cool, and I think it's going to catch on.
You're probably right.
We are headed this weekend to Seattle, Washington, Coffee City, as everyone is calling it these days, for Emerald City Comic-Con. I am super excited about this. I've done Emerald City once before back in 2014, and it was incredibly fun. But Matt and I are going, we're going to have a table set up in what appears to be like Podcast Alley. We're there with a bunch of podcasts. We're actually going to be right next to Jay and Miles, which is really cool. And we're going to be doing a live show, and that is Friday at 12 noon at the podcast stage, which we do not actually know if it is in a room or if it is open to just the air. But we're going to be doing a live War Rocket Ajax. Guests, TBD. But it should be a pretty fun time.
We talked out some ideas for guests that I think will be really great. So undoubtedly we will have some good guests. I should note, our table is PZ7, which is Podcast Zone Table Number 7. Come check us out there. We're right next to Jay and Miles. All the other podcasts will be around where we are. But we'll also have, you know, our stuff that we would have at any comic convention where we aren't there as podcasts. I'll have my supervillain books. I'll have Copernicus Jones. Chris will have his various comics. I'm sure you'll have X-Men 92 stuff and all the stuff you typically have at conventions. Certainly come visit us at our table. Definitely come out to our live podcast Friday at noon.
It's going to be very fun. And we, unfortunately, do not get to the West Coast that often. I think this is the... Is this your only West Coast show this year, Matt? Because I'm pretty sure it's mine.
This year, as far as I know, yeah. Unless I get a weird last-minute invite somewhere, it will be my only West Coast comic convention.
I might have something when Deadpool comes out, but as far as conventions go, I'm pretty sure Emerald City is going to be it for me on the West Coast. So if you're in Seattle, if you're planning on going to Emerald City, please, please come by and say hi. That would be super awesome, and it would make us feel nice, which would be good. And that's all the business we had to get through, Matt.
So let's do some checks and recs. Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
Really, the only thing I've been doing this week has been CrossFit, and no one wants to hear about it. but I'm very excited about working out and losing some weight. Although, sadly, I am doing this instead of MMA, which means the MMA update theme song is, sadly, still unheard. But one day, it will rise like a phoenix from the ashes. So instead, there's something else that I wanted to talk about. I have had a very weird desire lately to play Warcraft. Not World of Warcraft, which I have never played and do not intend to ever play, but although I feel like this probably stems from watching Griffin McElroy's Peacecraft series that's up now every week on Polygon. But I want to play, like, Warcraft 3, like the real-time strategy Warcraft. I have had this, like, real desire to kind of sit down with a little, you know, well-made, point-and-click, real-time strategy game. I used to play StarCraft, like, all the time when I was in my college days. And I kind of miss that sort of repetitive, very calming style of play, because it's not something I've done in years. Like, since Warcraft 3, probably, was the last one I played. The problem is that I think my computer is too new to run that game. So here is what I want to do. If people think I should play, like, I should drop, like, $10 and get Warcraft 3, then let me know. If there's, like, a newer-ish or more interesting version that you think I would like that's maybe on Steam or something, also, holla at your boy, hit me up, because when I get some free time again in the dim and distant future, I would like to have that kind of calming video game experience. So that's what's on my mind this week.
I can tell you that there are programs that you can get to run older games on newer computers. So if you want that original Warcraft feel, there are ways to do it. You can get, like, DOS emulators or, like, old Windows emulators for your computer to play.
I don't think I need to go back that far. I'm on, like, OS 10.11, and I would need to be on, like, OS 10.6 is the problem. So I don't know if it would be an actual problem or not.
Fair enough.
I also don't know if there's maybe, like, something more interesting that I could be playing now. I don't know. Matt, what's your check this week?
My check is, speaking of going back and replaying games we like to play, I started replaying Bloodborne. It has been a lovely experience. I don't know how I got the itch to go back and replay it. I wanted to play it with a different character type, a different character build, because the build I played through at first, I kind of just kind of fell into playing, was an arcane build, because it just happened to be the skill that you needed to level up to use the weapon I wanted to use. But this time I'm purposely going through as a strength build, which means I'm using a different set of weapons. The Kirk Hammer has been what I've been using mostly in the game as of late. I started with the Hunter Axe instead of the Saw Cleaver, which was weird to me because I grew to love the Saw Cleaver so much. It's like a warming hug going back and playing Bloodborne again, which is a weird way to describe one of the creepiest, scariest, tonally terrifying games ever. I think the Bloodborne card game, which I got to play with some folks a few weeks ago, which is, once you get the hang of it, very fun. That kind of got me back in the mood to play Bloodborne again, because that card game uses, like, bosses from the actual game and the weapons and all that kind of stuff. So I am back in it until I finish this playthrough. And yeah, it's a nice feeling, especially since I've just got so much different stuff going on. Like, I think after Emerald City, I'm going to launch a Kickstarter for a comic, and I'm sure folks will be hearing about that soon. And I've got a book coming out, and I'm trying to figure out what to do with the screenplay I wrote. It's nice to just have this thing that I can do that feels oddly comforting for such an unsettling video game. So that's my check. Let's make some recommendations. What are you recommending this week?
My recommendation this week is going to be another entry in the McElroy family of products. You're listening to a podcast right now, so statistically, you listen to at least one McElroy family show. Which means you are no doubt aware that My Brother and My Brother and Me was turned into a TV show for CISO. No matter, you a CISO guy? It seems like the kind of thing you would like.
I don't have a subscription to CISO, but I'm getting to the point where I might have to get one because of Bim Bam, the TV show, which I'm not actually a listener to Bim Bam, the podcast, just because I feel like there's such a learning curve to get in on with that. Or, you know, I don't know where to start with it, but I watched the first episode of the TV show and was delighted by it. So there's that. There's the Take My Wife show on CISO. There's Bajillion Dollar Properties on CISO. It's building up to the point where I'm probably going to have to at least try it for a month to see what's on there.
Yeah, well, I am signing up pretty specifically to watch My Brother and Me, because the premiere episode, which they ran on YouTube, you know, I was planning to get CISO and watch the show anyway because I am a fan. But the premiere episode that went up on YouTube made me laugh so hard that I had to, like, I couldn't speak and had to communicate with gestures that I needed Aiden to turn, like, to pause it for a second so that I wouldn't die. It has what is genuinely some of the funniest comedy that I have seen in a long time. And it's so weird to see the format of that podcast translated not only to a show, but translated to a show and done so well. If you haven't watched that first episode, it's available on YouTube. Absolutely go and watch it. Although, again, statistically, you have seen it. Just the first 5 minutes, I was dying. And I will warn you, the first episode, the one they chose that everybody can go see to see if they like this show, is literally all about spiders. So if you have spider problems, it might not be for you. But for me, I could not breathe from laughing so hard at when Travis did a hit.
Travis did do a hit on Justin. It happened.
Matt, what is your recommendation going to be this week?
My recommendation this week, Chris, is something that I've sort of only recently discovered is like my go-to, put it on when I don't know what else to watch, have it on and watch it for a while show. It's kind of a weird recommendation for, you know, because it is a sketch comedy show that is over now. But I've just come to find it's like, I liked it when it was on, but I didn't watch it all the time because I didn't have cable through most of the time that it was on. And so I've only just occasionally watched it here and there, but I've started watching it more closely and appreciating it more, and that's Key and Peele. I always recognized Key and Peele as being pretty funny too funny, and now I think it's brilliant. Like, I'll just put on any episode and watch it and appreciate it for the construction of the sketches, the way they're put together, the characters that those guys do really well, and also kind of just the viewpoint of the show. It's a little weird to go back and watch now because so much of the show is Barack Obama-centric, I guess. But even that is comforting to go back and watch now. I don't know if people slept on Key and Peele. I feel like it was quite a popular show. But I also think it is a show that deserves going back, rewatching, and appreciating. From the first season, it is really tight and really well done. So if you are just sitting around and like, I want to watch something on Hulu, and you can't think of what to watch, go back and watch some episodes of Key and Peele, my friend. That's my recommendation. Chris, let's talk about some comics.
Let's talk about some comics.
One of the milestone issues of the week was Astro City number 41 in the current Vertigo numbering, but in the overall numbering of Astro City as a whole, it's issue number 100. This is the issue that explains how the city got its name. It goes back to the guy the superhero, the pulp hero is really what he is, who the city is named for. It's a pretty cool story because Asher City has focused a lot on Silver Age, the Silver Age, or a Silver Age feel, and it had a whole miniseries, set of miniseries about the Bronze Age, but it hasn't gone back to the Golden Age, or in this case, even the pre-Golden Age all that much. And so we get to see Astro City as it was then. I really enjoyed that story.
It's weird because it's the origin story for the city, but not the city, just the name Astro City.
Right.
Because it was what, like Rainman Falls?
Yeah, it just had like any old name, and it was just any old regular city. Until Astronaut, who is basically Clark Gable with a giant jet engine that he rides around and starts doing superhero stuff. He inspires other people to be superheroes, like All-American, who is a baseball-themed superhero, and a handful of others.
I would never say that like Kurt Busiek doesn't do his research, but I would put cash on the barrelhead, Matt, to bet you that the Clark Gable episode of You Must Remember This was playing a lot during the scripting of this issue. It does a great job of kind of doing all that cool history stuff in a way that's really accessible, which is the big trick of Astro City. Like, almost every story is one that you can pick up and not have to worry about the rest of the comic. It's just like a perfect little unit of comic book storytelling. And it does this really well. There's one thing, though, that really sticks out. There's a page where something happens. Specifically, it's like a weird, like, lizard, like, shape-shifting lizard man crime. And in the overarching story, it's a very minor thing. Like, it, as far as what happens in this issue, it's just like, yeah, there was some weird monster crime back in Astro City in the 40s. But when you turn the page, in between the panels, standing behind the panels is the Broken Man, who is a kind of a Grant Morrison analog, right? He's pointing to the previous page with a look on his face like, no, 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 that's important. Go back and read that again. You're gonna need to know about this. He's a very fourth wall breaky character, sort of addresses the reader directly, who showed up at the start of this volume. So the idea that you can get this fun, pulpy, adventure-y, very Astro City story in this issue, but also get this weird piece of a longer plot that's delivered to you in such a comic booky way. It's one of the great things about Astro City, like, just in general.
Well, first of all, we have our regular person identification character in the form of a city councilman who helps Astronaut do his superheroing, and who also looks exactly like Jimmy Stewart. Like, Clark Gable is not the only celebrity analog in here, old Hollywood analog. He ends up becoming the mayor of Astro City and ends up naming the city for him because they knew each other and you know, respected each other so much. And in some ways, this city councilman is kind of his Jimmy Olsen. He is given a device, a lamp, by which to contact him. On top of that, like, we get this kind of alternate comic book history where instead of Superman kicking everything off, we get basically a Howard Hughes figure being the first superhero. And I feel like that informs so much of what, you know, the kind of alternate superhero universe of what Astro City is and why it's different. I don't know how much of this is planned out and how much of this, you know, Kurt Busiek has a map for, a roadmap for. But the way the pieces fit together is really something to behold. And I thought this was a beautiful and a very appropriate 100th issue of Astro City, which is just such an elegant, pieced-together superhero comic.
It does the post-crisis DC trick, right? Because Superman, or the Samaritan in this case, is a guy who's around now. and he always has to be a guy who's around now, so history has to be something different. Yeah. And in this case, it goes back to Superman's, you know, direct predecessor, which is Doc Savage and Flash Gordon. And so the guy that we get, the astronaut, is Doc Savage meets Flash Gordon, like almost 50-50 directly descended from those two guys. So
to the point where Flash Gordon gets name dropped in here.
Yeah, he says like, "Oh, you're doing all this Flash Gordon stuff."
If you haven't been reading this Vertigo run of Astro City, I would very much advise you to go catch up on it, or just read this one single issue, because you don't have to have read what's come before to enjoy this one. Let's talk next about Transformers Lost Light number 3.
This series is one that I've been super looking forward to. It's the third season, quote-unquote, of More Than Meets the Eye. One of the things that I love about Transformers is that More Than Meets the Eye is about a lot of things. And it's about a lot of really relatable things. You know, it's about the characters' relationships. It's about, like, me feeling like Swerve a lot of the time. But it never stops being about giant transforming robots in space. Everything is not just filtered through that idea, but rooted in that idea. And Lost Light number 3 really gets to that. Because at its heart, it is an issue about refugees and trying to escape oppressive governments, and what you do when the government tries to control a fearful populace by making them afraid of everything else out there. Like, the Transformers are on an alternate universe version of Cybertron that has walled itself off from the rest of the universe, and the people in power have told the people on Cybertron, the Transformers, that the rest of the universe is dangerous, that the rest of the universe will come and destroy them if they do not give up all of their rights. And it's very, like, obvious political metaphor stuff. Like, there's conversation in this issue about refugees, but it's political stuff that's rooted in the idea of robots that turn into cars. And what does it mean when you are a robot who can turn into a car? And how does that affect your society? The entire issue is built on the idea of the functionalists, who, you know, that they're the faction that says that whatever you turn into, if you turn into a mining drill, you are a miner. If you turn into a spaceship, then they have you killed so that you can't leave the planet. I love that about this book, because it's based so much on what these issues look like for these characters. So the metaphor doesn't have to be a metaphor. The metaphor can just be about oppressive governments and be about, you know, the questions of liberty versus fear, and like how much you're willing to give up to feel safe. It doesn't need to be a metaphor, because it is only what it is. Because it's all built on this foundation of understanding how this universe works. I cannot stress enough how well-crafted James Roberts and the artists who have worked with him, like Nick Roach, like Alex Milne, that it's such a well-crafted book for that reason. I would not say jump on with Lost Light, even though we're only 3 issues in. Go back to the beginning of More Than Meets the Eye and read up, because it is the best kind of science fiction in comics, and I really, really love it. Matt, you wanted to talk about Amazing Spider-Man number 24, I believe.
Yes, I did. This is, I don't know if you could call it an epilogue, because there's a whole thing that is an epilogue coming up to Clone Conspiracy. But this is sort of closing the book on the regular Clone Conspiracy story. And, man, Clone Conspiracy has been really weird. Because here's something you might not have known, Chris. You know how the Jackal came back for this story?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that the new Jackal was actually Ben Reilly?
I don't think I heard that yet.
The new Jackal was actually Ben Reilly. He was the one who was bringing back a whole bunch of Miles Warren clones and Gwen Stacy and Dr. Octopus, all these other Spider-Man characters who were thought of as being dead. But it's also revealed in here that there's an actual Miles Warren who is also back. In mixed in with all those clones. A lot of this issue feels like table clearing. Like, we talk a lot about table setting in stories. This feels like table clearing. It's getting Ben Reilly out of the Jekyll persona and into whatever he's going to do next. And dealing with this real Miles Warren who has popped up. And only a little bit having Peter Parker hanging around in here. He's in here, and he's just sort of like dealing with some of the fallout of Clone Conspiracy so that you know, not everybody has to live with every possible consequence, because Peter Parker has invented devices that literally everybody wears. They're basically iPhones. So he could just use that to kind of clear all that off the table. It gets bogged down in maybe the less appealing stuff about comics, especially for new readers, where it's just like, okay, here's how everybody gets back to where they were before, or how everybody gets set into the position they need to be in for the next story. And we're going to make that a story, which is a necessary evil in comic books, but you know, not always exactly what I want. I will say that the writing is peppy. The characters have very distinct voices, and actually, the Ben Reilly in this comic is appealing in his kind of anti-hero-ness, and also interestingly identifiable as you know, somebody, a character that's different from Peter Parker. Giuseppe Comunicoli, who's been doing Spider-Man art for some time now, I feel like has really come into his own as a Spider-Man artist. When he was, you know, doing Spider-Man stuff a few years ago, I don't really know if I was super into it or that I loved it. I think it looks great in this issue, though. I think he's doing really awesome work. And Dan Slott and Christos Gage, you can't say they're not invested in these characters. I'll say that much. It feels very lived in, and these characters feel like voices that have been very, very deeply developed. I just hope that we can kind of get out of these, like, sort of mini-event stories. Oh, we're always bringing Gwen Stacy back. Like, let's not do that for a while, guys. Let's just not do that for a while. And that's going to do it for our comic segment. We're going to talk to the guys from The Nerdy Show and Behind Lightning Dogs in just a minute. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about Loot Crate. Loot Crate, for those that don't, is a subscription box service. You subscribe, and then they send 6 to 8 totally exclusive, super cool items to your home, and then you get to keep those things.
They don't take them back?
They don't take them back. It's not a rental service.
I thought there was like I thought this was like a loan. Because you get such cool stuff. You get exclusive pop culture gear based on some of the franchises that that we love, that you love. And they're like, I thought it was like a limited time thing where they would literally come to your house and knock on the door. And they're like, okay, I'm sorry. Like this t-shirt is super cool. And everybody always tells you, hey, that's a rad shirt whenever you go out. But it's time for Matt to have it. And then they take it and they wash it. They wash it and then they bring it to Matt's house. Is that not how it works?
No, it's not a system. Because I know there's been some confusion about this. Uh-huh. It's not some kind of system where the box gets sent to your house and then you have maybe like a few days to determine whether or whatnot you want to keep that box. And if you don't want to keep it, you send it back. But if you only get that one box, you keep just the one. It's not a rental scenario where you get to keep a box for about 30 days and then you have to send it back. It's not something where you have to pass on the box to a friend, even though you can give that stuff to a friend. Because here's the deal. The box that comes to your house every month that you pay less than $20 a month for, you just keep it. That's just your stuff now. The t-shirt, the pen, all the cool toys and gear and stuff you can use around the house, stuff you can put up to display around your house. It's just yours now.
I did not know you could do that. We've been doing these Loot Crate ads for like a year, and I thought they took it. I mean, it would still be great. It would still be great if you were paying less than $20 a month, And if you use the coupon code WarRocketAjax and you go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax, that gives you a break. That lets them know that you're an Ajax listener, so they give us a little something on the side. I thought that was a reasonable price to just have some cool stuff around your house for a month. I didn't know that you get to keep it. That's amazing.
It's pretty shocking. So, look, before anybody else finds out about this,
yeah, keep this.
I don't
secret.
Know. I don't know who knows. Okay, but you can go to lootcrate.com/WarRocketAjax and enter the coupon code WarRocketAjax. You can get $3 off your new subscription, and you just keep all that stuff. You just keep it. So go do that. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's yours. You get to keep it.
But keep it on the DL, okay? I don't want this getting out. Let's talk to the creators of Lightning Dogs.
Joining us for the program, we've got some people that I have been wanting to talk to for months at this point, because Cat Blackard and I were hanging out at North Carolina Comic Con, Bull City, here in Durham, North Carolina. I heard about a project that I immediately needed to know everything about. So we have, joining us from the Nerdy Show Network, the crew behind Lightning Dogs. We have Cap, we have Doug, we have Tony. Guys, welcome to the show. It is so good to have you here.
Oh!
Hashtag
already. That's how it starts.
Hashtag howl noise.
Happy to be here, fellas. It's good. It's a pleasure.
This is the voice of Cap. This is the voice of Doug.
And this is the voice of God. I mean, Tony.
These are disembodied voices, and our bodies are elsewhere. When we podcast, it's specifically we become digital entities, and it's easier that way.
You're already dropping a lot of heavy metaphysical stuff on me.
I trust me that the Lightning Dogs is not heavy nor metaphysical. It is purely a love letter to the late 80s, early 90s action sci-fi cartoons that we grew up loving, and maybe sometimes even wishing were better, and also are. Favorite B-movies.
Cap, I think that's a good place to start, because, like I said, you told me about this when we were hanging out at NC Comic Con. I hadn't seen you in a while, so I was talking to you, and I was like, so, what's up? And you were like, well, Lightning Dogs is up. So, explain to our listeners who might not know about it, because I genuinely think this is one of the best things I have heard about in podcasting in a really long time. Explain how all of this happened.
You dirty, rotten flatterer. Okay, sure. Lightning Dogs is a would-be animated series about a group of anthropomorphic dogs who travel to a post-apocalyptic Earth and have to fight the evil vampire, Glampire, and his minions. And as for how it happened, well, we were recording an episode of our primary show we do, Nerdy Show, and a song intro came up. We had a song break for a arm cannon cover of the Thundercats theme, and it was called Lightning Dogs. So
none of the lyrics changed. It was just called.
Called Lightning Dogs. Yeah. And so I was like, well, wait, what's Lightning Dogs? That sounds more interesting to me. What was supposed to be like a 30-second max song segue turned into a 10-minute long discussion that we kept coming back to. We were obsessed with it. It was myself, Doug, Tony, and then also our co-host Hex and Brian Clevenger from Atomic Robo, who co-founded the Nerdy Show Network with myself and Hex. We were just riffing. We were riffing, coming up with crazy ideas, talking about the Kung Fu Poodle, Pierre, who was going to be a member of the Lightning Dogs. And
Lion-O became Ding-O,
yeah,
which was a naming convention that didn't stick, but the name did.
It's working already. It's working.
It is.
It's magic.
It is.
And we're like, well, okay, what's Mumra? Glampire. Okay, perfect.
Yeah. I don't know how many jokes it took before we finally said, wait a minute. there is a definite tipping point. I don't remember which joke it was, but there's a moment where you can hear us say, I think this actually just accidentally became a good idea.
Yeah.
Like a legit cartoon that I would want to see.
And I guess where we should back up with this premise is that what Lightning Dogs presently is Lightning Dogs, the official podcast, that's P-A-W, because of dog puns.
Which is the foundation of every good show.
Right. Well, yeah, that's how it started. Agree. It started with puns. That's really
and that is a documentary of our quest to turn Lightning Dogs into an animated series, a comic book, an audio drama, whatever the hell it turns into. We got plans. We can talk about all those plans. But right now, Lightning Dogs, which is at lightningdogs.com, is a documentary of us accidentally creating this. We have the entire moment of conception was recorded thanks to divine providence. And
this one doesn't bring back any blushing memories of seeing your parents in weird positions. So,
oh, Jesus. and world building and all the trials and tribulations of us figuring out how do three people who are in the arts but not animators create an animated series.
I wanted to ask about the idea of immediately making it an animated series. Or based on the video that you guys have up on the Lightning Dogs website, you know, the video pretty strictly says that the main goal is to make this an animated series. And you said that there is a chance that it could end up being a comic. We're a pretty comic-centric podcast. Chris and I think our heads are always in thinking of ideas to make something a comic. And since so much of this is kind of concept art at this point, or art that looks like it could translate into a comic, what made you guys decide, like, you know, what we really want to do with this is make it a fully animated show rather than the frankly more achievable goal of making a comic book?
Well, yeah. You know what they say, you know what that oft kind of stupid phrase, shoot for the moon and you'll reach the stars.
Even if you miss. That's the missing is the important part of that quote, Tony.
You know what, though?
If you shoot for the moon and you hit the stars, you either missed or you have to realign the weapon that fired you in the first place.
Why is it a weapon? It could have been just a rocket ship.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I think this sounds like the plot of an episode of Lightning Dogs is what this sounds like to me.
The idea was, you know, we've made through just the virtue of being a nerd-centric podcast network with a focus on all things pop culture and animation and comic books, we've made connections throughout it, and we want to see just how far we can take it. If we can, with our limited experience in the area, take this as far as we can go. Because ultimately, when the song plays in our heads, when we picture these characters just burning up dirt across the wasteland and the bitching lightning rod,
right,
which is the name of their lead vehicle, it plays out like one of these classic shows. Yeah. It plays out like the intro to the Thundercats. It plays out like the intro to SWAT Cats. There's a lot of cat-centric stuff, despite the fact that they're dogs. It's okay.
Silverhawks. Jason the Wheel Warriors. I don't know.
Well, I think the important thing is that the episode in question where we came up with this crazy idea was an episode discussing the decline of modern-day animation on television.
It was specifically a reaction to the cancellation of Young Justice and Tron Uprising.
Yeah, I mean, we were all kind of feeling morose about the whole thing, and we're just like, man, why are all these great cartoons getting canceled? How come we don't see any, like, what's the new great big cartoon that's coming out? What's something that everyone's attached to and everyone can like? And we were all feeling kind of nostalgic at the time, and dare I say we caught lightning in a bottle, pardon the pun, with this idea.
Don't you pardon that pun, sir.
But the point being, this idea came seemingly out of nowhere, and the topic at hand was animation we would want to see. Why aren't we seeing good animation? So this idea was surrounded by us just talking about how to make something good in animated form. So it just felt like a natural fit. And because it's such a lofty goal.
Yeah, but to your point, I mean, comic book is achievable. It's something all three of us have experience in creating and publishing. So it is, like, very high on the list. And it does make more sense for there to be, say, stepping stones, natural stepping stones for getting to the lofty goal of animation. So we fully plan to take all those natural stepping stones, but we did want to see how far we could take it. And a lot of it came down to the idea of we want to clearly communicate what Lightning Dogs is, and people have had kind of a hard time grasping it, because like they'll even with the documentary, like, wait, it's an animated series. Like people, because it's fueled by animation, people assume it's an animated series. So we're like, okay, it does make more sense for us to do a comic book, or in our case with Nerdy Show, with like as a network of podcasts, one of the things we're best known for is our audio drama. So we could easily make it an audio drama, the animation without the animation,
pipe organ strings and all.
But we wanted to see what would happen if we shot for the stars outright. And that's why. But
the journey we're on.
Is it more likely that we're going to be a comic book? Yeah, it's way more likely. Totally.
I just can't unsee these characters in motion, like in this animated format, though. That's partly the problem.
And hell, part of our initial pitch in that first lightning meeting, if you will, was casting it.
Right. Yeah. Dream casting is with all these
that
amazing
was super
voice
impractical.
Actors. Yeah. Yeah. But at that point, it was still a joke. You know, it wasn't until afterwards where we sat down and we're like, man, this there's something to this.
Listen,
this
at the time we could have gotten David Bowie to be the Glampire.
Yeah.
That's at the time we could have.
Oh yeah, Glampire's basically David Bowie, by the way.
I'm really curious as to what you've learned going into it. Because I mean, obviously I am someone who loves G.I. Joe. But you know, sitting down and thinking about all those the kind of animated series that we remember from like the 80s and 90s, a lot of them are so high concept, and a lot of them are so high concept because there's a machine in place to build them. Like yeah. You think about G.I. Joe or Gem or Mask or Masters of the Universe or Thundercats, there's a machine in place where there are toys that are designed and you have the good guy toys and the bad guy toys and they fight each other. And Lightning Dogs, like, if you look at the designs, they're toys. They are already toys. They have accessories, they have vehicles and playsets. But the idea of trying to do that without having that machine in place of being, you know, Hasbro or Mattel or Playmates, which, you know, is really what fueled the Ninja Turtles cartoon, yeah. Has going into it with that in mind, has that been daunting, or have you learned like ways that it could be achievable, like ways that you could actually make it happen?
Well, I guess I should probably establish by where we are now in the continuum of our quest, right? We're presently building a pitch Bible, and the pitch Bible is going to be reviewed by Greg Weissman, the creator of Gargoyles and co-creator of Young. He's agreed to do it. We got to pay him. That's a gig for him, but we've done a lot of podcast projects in the past. We're pals. We say hey at conventions, so he's agreed to do it. That moment of him checking out what we've done so far, us giving our best pitch for this as though it were an animated series, is going to define how we move forward kind of in that regard. Because, I mean, he's a seasoned vet, and he's seen probably the worst of it. He's made some of the best shows that have had some of the most untimely demises.
Mm-hmm. Two-season Weissman. Poor guy.
No, we're not. That name is not going to stick.
It's just
he's got the third season of Young Justice
coming out. Yeah,
which
man,
is
you gotta
this
stop.
Is no, it's the end of the trend. It's the end of the trend.
We hope so. We anticipate his sage-like advice telling us, "You guys are out of your minds. You guys are like this is the you know like there's maybe some hope here, but like you got to do a lot more work X, Y, and Z." And that's what we want to hear. Mm-hmm. We want to hear that. It's going to be an episode. It's going to be recorded. His sage-like advice is going to be, you know, a public item, just like every part of the Lightning Dogs process so far has been public. Ideally, and I know this is asking a lot of the Hollywood machine, if we, say, went to a pitch meeting, it would be recorded. Or at the very least, we'd be recording an episode immediately following the pitch meeting in the corridor outside. We want to...
Transparency.
We want to show how this sausage is made in this preposterous circumstance we've put ourselves in.
To the point of toys, we haven't really discovered anything yet, save our own enthusiasm for it, and these days with the advent of various 3D printers, we can have proof of concept with, and
our vehicle designer is actually like, he's a game designer. He does 3D modeling. Like he's got people on tap to make these things for us just for funsies. I mean, at a price, but like if we wanted to say, you know, go to a convention and have some action figures on the table, that isn't impossible.
Well, I'll say as far as the lessons learned, though, the two takeaways for me are you've never had as much fun creating crazy ideas and world building as you will with your friends.
Wife of Goblin.
And two, the polar opposite of that, hair-pullingly frustration of paperwork for trademark copyright.
Oh, yeah.
Navigating that jungle is insane, and we are insane. I don't know why we
The only reason we've kept at it trying to get to the bottom of that nonsense is because we love working on it so much. It can't be for nothing. Something good must come from it.
Yeah. To the end of action figures, I mean, like, I love that stuff. I live for that stuff. I was at, like, Lionel Playworld, KB Toys, Toys R Us every damn weekend hunting for Ninja Turtles. So having the opportunity to have so much fun creating this thing and build it kind of backwards and think not just, like, what would be my cool sci-fi story, but like actually to be like, all right, so this, the premise of this show is that it could have been it one of these series with a little bit more, let's say, plot integrity than one of those series. But to think about everything in terms of how is this going to look as an action figure, like how, even designing the vehicles, is this going to be, are they chunky action figures that we need to have these vehicle designs that will accommodate them like the thicker Ninja Turtles figures, or do they have the articulation of a G.I. Joe? Like, we've been asking ourselves these questions for how we're building this thing from the inside out.
I made the point earlier about how achievable a comic is versus how achievable an animated series is, but also the truth of the matter is that doing a series like that is probably more achievable now than it ever would have been.
That's true.
in the 80s or 90s, because you have so many more distribution systems for that kind of thing. So you talking about like a Hollywood pitch meeting made me think about, you know, all the different places where something like this could exist, like, you know, streaming only digital services, mm-hmm. and stuff like, you know, I don't know if CISO is necessarily the place for it, but CISO is something that comes to mind as a mm-hmm. place where, you know, TV series that wouldn't necessarily have happened otherwise come to be.
Yeah, Funimation has that Verve platform now. I don't know if it's going to succeed or not, but it exists.
Would you guys be satisfied since so much of this is in the mold of Saturday morning network cartoons, or at least the cartoons you get on Cartoon Network? You know, would you be happy with some kind of streaming digital deal that maybe has a little more of a restrained budget than like a network cartoon series would have?
For my money, absolutely. While yes, the idea of it is mire is it lives and breathes within that 6 a.m. Saturday morning cartoons, jammies, and cereal world. What that is has changed because, I mean, all of us in this room, and probably you guys as well, we're all still Saturday morning cartoon enthusiasts. They just live different places now. Some of the best Saturday morning cartoons I've been watching recently have existed on Netflix or on Hulu or platforms like that. For me, absolutely. A more restrained budget on one of these streaming platforms, just the fact that it's out there for people to see,
We can work with it. I mean, like, think about the difference of if, say, we had the providence of getting picked up by Adult Swim, that would be a different kind of Lightning Dog show. It would be a more adult Lightning Dog show. If we got picked up by just a hypothetical Cartoon Network, then it would be, you know, it would be more all ages. It can be either of those things. It's ultimately an all ages show in its mindset, and it can exist wherever it needs to. I would love for it to be from a streaming service. That would be fine.
I just want eyeballs on this thing. Like, I just want people to be able to consume
it. We love
it.
Doing it, and everybody who we tell about, who we you know, explain the premise to, their enthusiasm mirrors our enthusiasm, and it's a beautiful cycle, and we want to perpetuate the cycle indefinitely.
I mean, hell, you guys had us on. You love us. We're great.
I'm really curious about the process of writing that pitch Bible, though, like the series Bible that you're working on, because there is something to be said about the process of everything kind of coming to you and riffing on stuff. Like, Matt and I have both had projects that we've done that have kind of originated with that. You know, Chad and Matt and Josh and I did Awesome Hospital for 2 years, and that started with lunch at Taco Bell and me and Chad goofing off, like, talking about a weird hospital story and what that would be like. But when it comes time to translate those ideas into a consistent form, into a form that, like, you would ideally be giving to a network or to a producer or to a writer's room, what's that process like? Like, what is the point where you're like, okay, this is a really great joke, but it's inconsistent with the rest of the universe we're trying to build?
Well, you procrastinate for 2 years. And then you re-listen to all the old audio to remember what you'd already you've already forgotten. Then you say, that joke don't work no more. We got to get rid of that. But ultimately, it came down to us looking up as many pitch Bibles, story Bibles, writer's guides of any TV show we could find, specifically sci-fi or animation. I mean,
weirdly, Doug.
Yeah, like a TV, oh, yeah. The animated show, Disney's Doug. Cap, you actually bought a copy, a hard copy of that online.
Yeah, and Doug Banks did not misspeak the Disney's Doug specifically. Not the Nickelodeon Doug, but the Disney follow-up. I have the series, it's some kind of production guide. Yeah, yeah. Series production guide for season 7 of Doug.
And then we got other online resources have PDFs or the pitch Bibles for things like Batman the Animated Series, all of the Star Treks, including the original Star Trek. I mean, the things where you, like a huge concept like Star Trek, how do you pitch that for the first time for someone who's never heard of it before? And we take a look at those and say, all right, well, this is similar in the sense that no one's ever heard of this. How do we make – how does this come across? Other more obscure things like failed pilots for Son of He-Man. We read the pitch Bible for that, you know, and one a successful one like Mighty Max. We read the pitch Bible for Mighty Max.
Mighty Max pitch Bible is incredible.
Yeah.
And so good.
So just taking what we like and then saying, all right, well, what – realizing, okay, they talk about XYZ. We haven't talked about that yet. We need to figure out, okay, we have to have a bio for all of our characters. We have to figure out how many biomes are in this world. Like, what does it look like? You know, what are the villains like? What's the potential for, reoccurring stories in this world?
How much information do we have to know about our first season before we, show it in the pitch Bible, and how much information per episode? How deep do we have to go? Mm-hmm. And all these, ultimately, what anybody should know about a pitch Bible if you haven't seen one before is, it's much like a comic book script, which is to say that the format does not really exist. It's completely up to the people who are creating it and the people whom they're speaking to. So there's no set format. There's just a lot of similar formats.
And to your point of kind of taking the riffing and the dumb jokes that we've come up with and trying to form them into a malleable story and actually putting that together into some sort of production guide, one of the benefits of working with the property of Lightning Dogs is – It's steeped in, like we've said before, 80s and 90s, kind of that over-the-top ridiculousness that's also then merged with show, because a lot of my influences anyway were like Avatar, Legend of, or The Last Airbender, and Legend of Korra, and Young Justice, which would have these off-the-wall, just weird episodes and characters, but still managed to tell a story, a compelling emotional story and narrative. So all of our dumb jokes still have a place in the show. It's just finding a way to bring them in.
Right.
After all, we still have a basset hound named Angela.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't talked about the characters much, but one thing I came in really, really early was like, guys, okay, hear me out. So we have a basset hound, and her name is Angela. Angela Basset Hound, you guys.
But to that point, I think looking up all these other story Bibles pointed us into a direction of, okay, what do we need to know? Mm-hmm. And then not like throwing out our old ideas, but rather saying which one of these are strong, which one of these hold, which of these mm-hmm. hold up.
And what can we use in quote-unquote later seasons?
Correct.
We've got a lot of later seasons material.
Yeah. And laser seasons.
And laser seasons material. Guys, the laser season is going to be out of this world. Mm. Trying to get REO Speedwagon to provide some backing vocals.
I don't want to say that you're hitting gold every time you talk about this thing, but laser season is something you should write down. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Putting it right next to the sketch of you guys as dogs.
Can we talk about this for a second? Can we talk about the sketch of us as dogs? We put it up on Twitter. Matt, you tweeted it out and then I retweeted it because it's maybe my favorite thing that exists right now. How did you decide what kind of dogs we would be?
Really, it was just kind of looking at you guys and getting a sense. Chris, just looking at images of you, you struck me as kind of a bulldog type, so I went for kind of the shorter ears and just kind of that physicality. And Matt, I don't know, I drew a snout and then worked my way back from there.
Well, what they always say about me is start with the snout. That's rule number one.
And work back from there.
I'd heard that, so it seemed like a good but no, our dog selection process across the board has been kind of for sake of
just entertainment more than anything else.
A little bit of shape diversity.
A little bit of shape diversity.
And, you know, make some unique silhouettes and what would make an interesting, diverse team.
And then you guys just made a great pair. We got some shapes. And
I put some shapes together, and that was that. The rest, as they say, was Hollywood magic. I fed you guys into the machine.
Get the hell out
Thanks,
of here.
Hollywood, Tony. Fuck right off.
No, well, what you say is fuck right off, but what I think you mean is you're welcome.
There's a lot you can get from documents like story Bibles and even like pilot scripts and stuff like that. But a lot of times when you look at documents like that that are so refined and whittled down and you know, the essence of a show, they don't show their work in those documents, you know, with reason. That's not what the producer you're pitching to or the executive you're pitching to wants to see. But as somebody who's trying to learn, I would assume that you get a lot of the pieces through those documents, but not all the pieces or the sequence. So how have you guys decided to, you know, prioritize all the different work that goes into something like this, like
constant bickering.
Prioritize. What's this word?
It's like, of what's more important, this the waifu goblin, it's like, or the diamond dogs. Like, it's like
the answer is always the waifu goblin.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's hard to say really, but like, well,
we
you can hear us bicker about it. I mean, like, that's the thing, the transparency
here. We have documented all of this.
Yeah, you remember, like, well, hey, how did they, when they were making Transformers, how did they decide what Transformers are more important, how they design it? We don't know, but here you can hear it.
Like, for us, I mean, a lot of the world building happened because it's like, okay, we are trying to answer a question we have. What do we need to know to answer those questions? Mm-hmm. Like, we came up with the entire backstory of our dog's homeworld, Domus, by trying to write the biographies for them and realizing that
if we're going to have characters
that relate to each other, we need to know how they related, what
where
these
do they
events
come from.
Were. So we sat down with this tabletop storytelling device called Microscope and literally built an entire planet over centuries of time.
Yeah. Probably never even going to have to, you know,
never going to reference it.
And it has nothing to do with the show proper.
Unless it's in a flashback, we're not even going to see that planet.
Yeah. But the idea being that it's like, we have, all right, how do we, see, when you set out to make something like this, you say, what if this was good? And then
when
you realize,
give a mouse a cookie.
Yeah, it's like, all right, well, we have these characters, but what if they were, like, good? Like, what if they were well-written? All right, well, then we got to have backstory. Well, if we have backstory, we have to know where they come from. And, oh, they come from a fictitious planet of dog people. What the hell is that like? And then one thing just feeds into another.
And the dog people come from a colonization operation from Earth, but not Earth as we know it, from
it's our future.
So, like,
our future Earth goes to the stars, has a colony on another planet. They bring dogs with them for reasons that we're too long to go into because it's a whole goddamn podcast. They leave the dogs behind. The dogs evolve over the centuries, millennia, thousands, the time, space, gravity, it all
some
manipulates
period
things.
Of time.
Augmented by special crystals, which are constant MacGuffin, and then they use the Farfetch, which
is
our Stargate.
In a reverse Stargate Prometheus.
That's amazing.
Thing.
That's, I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt. The Farfetch is fucking amazing.
Yeah, okay,
I feel like
sorry,
at some point
we
are going to have to break down the characters and some of just the genius of Lightning Dogs. But before that, yeah,
we love yourself so much.
Smug bastard.
I'm sorry. I'm not the one who first said that this is the greatest thing ever and that every time we talk is gold.
I'm Tony. I can just draw gold on paper right now. With name person, I draw him as a dog. There you go. Boom. Here, million dollar idea.
Doug, are we coming on
We're
the
genius.
Fact that you are just salty that I haven't drawn you as a dog yet?
No, it's that I'm out of the three people in this room right here, I'm the only who can't draw worth a damn. I'm like, we're doing an animated show and I can't draw a stick figure to save my life. That's the problem.
All of our world building and all of the pitch Bible, everything has come from trying to answer questions. And we're kind of just working back from the answers we've seen in other pitch Bibles and other storytelling devices like that.
And to that end, it is we've clung to opportunities to get focused, to delegate in a reasonable way. But we're also combating the fact that we have day jobs. Like, I'm the only person – like, the Nerdy Show Network has been around since 2009, and I am the only full-time employee it has, and I have a day job.
I work 50 to 60 hours a week and then dedicate as much time as I can outside of that to art and world building.
So this is the struggle. This is the documentary podcast is our world building, all the fun we're having, all the crazy ideas, the process of developing the show,
while juggling real life.
On occasion, like the drama of juggling real life with all this crap.
Find out what happens when creatives stop being nice and start getting real.
The real world.
Donuts.
I was wondering real quick if you could talk about what fan response has been. Because, like you said, when you describe Lightning Dogs to people, there is a pretty positive reaction that you tend to get.
I think it's safe to say, and I'm not exaggerating, when the fan response is the only reason we're talking about it. Like, yeah. It would have stopped. We would have stopped after the first conversation. It just would have been a joke that maybe, you know,
we might have come back to it.
Maybe,
because
yeah,
we were enjoying ourselves.
We would have come back to it the way you come back to it. Remember when we had that funny, dude, tell him that funny joke, the idea that you had. That's so funny.
It would have been
funny.
An in-joke. It would have just popped up from Nerdy Show episode to Nerdy Show episode. When the Lightning Dogs came in and saved the day.
It's like a punchline. But literally, the fan response we got from just that first episode, it really made us feel like there's something here.
Well, I mean, let me put it this way. Let me tell you what straight up happened.
Yeah.
We put out the episode. And we're a totally fan-funded network. At the time, we were operating only on a donation system. Patreon didn't exist yet. Two fans each gave us $100 within hours of that episode going up. They're like, please talk about this. That's not normal. That isn't usual. I mean, just $200 out of the blue of like what you guys just said was incredible. Please keep doing this. Please make another episode.
I was like, well, I guess this is my life now.
wait, hold on. People don't just walk up to you on the street and hand you money? That's not normal?
To be fair, we don't always talk about Lightning Dogs. You know, we didn't at the time.
I mean, if I was busking and just telling people, not singing or doing anything useful, but, you know, like just saying, hey, so we got this story about dogs.
Let me tell you about the Lightning Dogs.
Maybe that's how we're going to fund the first season.
And aside from that, a lot of the fans have latched onto the idea because it's something that is near and dear to their hearts. You know, we're all people of nostalgia, and hell, the first person to give us fan art is the guy who's designing the Lightning Dogs vehicles. So there's a very back and forth conversation with the fans.
The interactivity and the transparency mixed together
is awesome.
Yeah, has been great because they're along for the ride with us, and hearing their, you know, I don't want to necessarily say feedback, but hearing their reaction to some of the crazy stuff we come up with lets us know if, like, no, we're still on the right track with this. Like, this really has the appeal. It's not just us making each other laugh. It's that we're getting a response from an outside world that's not immediately invested in it.
And the reason Doug doubled back on feedback is because we're releasing episodes. We have so much recorded at this point that there's no opportunity for a real, like,
for course correction at this point. Like, so I was like, guys, you might want to rein that in. Sorry, that was 6 months ago. That's now a main character. So
at this point, we have a John Madden dog that fights mutant fungus, and that's canon.
You said he's a dog right there. So let me stop.
Now we have to stop. Yeah,
that's not accurate.
That is not canon. But on the point of questions. And fans, we have fans who ask us every Tuesday. We get asked questions on our message boards, and we try to answer them because that in turn helps us create more cool stuff. So we love questions.
It's been great. Like, that feedback has they've asked us to answer questions that we had partial answers to. That all of a sudden we come up with answers. It's been a really kinetic experience. In short,
yeah.
Well, it sounds like, you know, you guys' fan base, which I assume is. Adults are really into this idea. do you think that this would also have an appeal to kids, or are you like
only smart children? Really?
Well, sure. But like a big question that always gets asked when you're pitching something like this is who's the audience? Right? Is a step at some point in this to figure out if kids might like this, or is this something you're going to pitch to as like? Well, this is, you know, it's like a lot of other cartoon shows where it's as much for adults as it is for kids.
Well, I think what we've always said is it's for families. Families can enjoy it.
Kids, adults. It's always, right. We've shot for that same demographic as the shows that brought us to the table.
Yeah, things like Young Justice and Legend of Korra, tonally speaking, are kind of what we're aiming for. But like Cap's kind of mentioned earlier, this can be adjusted. Like, you can take the Marvel universe and do rated R films that are coming out, and you can also do PG-13, or you can do like G-rated cartoon Saturday morning cartoons, but it's still all Marvel and it all has a similar kind of story and feeling. I kind of think, dare I compare us to Marvel? Like, just but to say
you
that,
know what?
That
why
we have
not?
A universe.
Look who
the,
you're
the
asking. Can,
the canvas right. of Lightning Dogs. The thing that we accidentally built for ourselves is an amazing canvas. We can tell commandy style, insane Jack Kirby stories. There's no limits. The whole premise is take a crazy idea and make that crazy idea work. And that's been not just in the world that we're creating, but of the project itself. So it could really go anyway. I mean, might we focus group it someday and find out if families will like it? Sure, that sounds like a great episode.
Well, anyone, also sounds like a good idea.
Whoever seems to like it, we should make it for them. Like, but ultimately,
I think kids would love this. I think, like, because I would have loved this. I would have been all about this. I want to make a show for me at the same age that I discovered Ninja Turtles.
Something that's not condescending to children. And something that would make them feel cool for watching it.
And something that their parents would be thrilled to, like,
oh, thank goodness they're watching Lightning Dogs.
To not just watch it, but to spend money on it.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes, the Lightning Dogs toys, that's good. Just don't – no more of that other – I'm trying to think of a really bad cartoon that's on. But I don't watch bad cartoons, so I don't know. I'm not up on what's bad on TV.
We're also kind of experiencing a cartoon renaissance right now. So
true. It's tough.
Well, once you guys get to the laser season, I know kids will absolutely
laser
love
season,
it.
Laser season, yes.
We have had plenty of questions about Lightning Dogs, but now it is the time of the show where we turn the questions over to our listeners. Matt, if people want to get in on these conversations that we have each and every week here on War Rocket Ajax, how can they go about that?
Well, Chris, it's very easy. First, your initial step is to master interstellar travel. And once you do that, bring some dogs with you. Buddy?
I thought you were going to create the universe from scratch. to create it, well, I already fucked it up. It's a Carl Sagan quote. It's good. It's come in my head. Go back out.
To apple pie. It's apple pie.
To bake apple a pie, pie. That's the one.
To
yeah.
bake a pie, you must first create the universe. Yes.
Trying to do a bit here, guys.
Go on.
Dogs are our best friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
But listen, you got to make sure that these dogs aren't, you know, fixed. Don't get some dogs straight from the shelter. Get some breeding dogs. You know what I'm saying? And take them up to an alien planet.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
No, don't fuck the dogs. That's not what I'm talking about, guys. Take them up to an alien planet where they crossbreed with the animals of that planet. And then you get a race of super smart, super cool dogs in real life. And then Lightning Dogs can be based on a true story. Then go to twitter.com and sign up for an account. Follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris. Wait until usually Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern time, sometimes Wednesday night. That's 6:30 Pacific. One of us will put out the call for questions, and you can ask a question just like these you're about to hear for Cap, Doug, and Tony. The first question we have comes from Tales to Enrage on Twitter, who wants to know, when do you plan to cross over with the Street Sharks and Biker Mice from Mars?
Oh, boy. Two of my personal favorites.
Hey, Biker Mice was solid.
No, it wasn't, Tony.
It was okay.
I was a child, and I knew it was bad. And that's how you know it's very bad.
The answer is into the laser season, where we will find the skeletal remains of the Street Sharks after their fight with Captain Scrap, our turtle friend. And then the Biker Mice from Mars will show up in a background screen as they are checking in on Earth's progress.
I guess I would say Street Sharks did have a design influence a little bit on some of the weird Freaks of the Wasteland.
Yeah, Street Sharks had some pretty heavy mutation elements to it from time to time, and that's what I liked about it. Actually, I think it's a more watchable show than Biker Mice. Granted,
if you like Biker Mice from Mars, we got Bikers of the Wasteland.
We do have lots of there's
who
lots of
I think are better.
They're cool. They're real cool.
They're freaky.
Not quite as
badass.
Not quite as jawsome as Street
you know.
Sharks
honestly, like on a serious note, if someone if I don't know who owns those properties, but if someone said, hey, you want to do a crossover, I would fucking love to. It would be a fucking blast. I don't know how within the continuity, but let's
do it.
That hasn't stopped us before.
No, it certainly hasn't.
Speaking of crossovers with other shows, Luke McClung on Twitter wants to know if the Lightning Dogs could defeat the SWAT Cats in a race before their inevitable team-up, of course.
Is that in a vehicle or on foot? The answer to both is yes.
And I'm going to go ahead. I'm just going to paint a picture as to how this race would work. They would start, and it would be a competition. It would be neck and neck. The SWAT Cats would be in their badass jet, and they'd be zipping across. Probably Pierre on foot would be racing them. Lightning Rod,
we should add the Lightning Dogs have a tragic accident that happens. They do get superpowers.
All lightning based in their own special way, kind of,
not really.
But the race would then be interrupted by a combination of Glampire and one of the SWAT Cats villains, probably the time clock guy whose name escapes me at this point. They would then
have to join forces,
defeat that creature, defeat both of them, and each probably would have to fight the opponent or their teammate's villain in order to win the day. And then the episode would close with the race restarting in earnest, with the victor left unknown to the annals of time.
Although my money's on Lightning Dogs.
I mean, granted, the Lightning Dogs, thus so far in what we've worked out, that we know at some point they will get a flying contraption, but we don't have.
That's why it depends. Is it in a vehicle or is it on foot?
Yeah.
The answer is still yes.
Yeah, if they're in a vehicle and Pierre is on foot, the answer is that he still wins. but that's something I would like to see.
The only reason that the SWAT Cats might be in the lead for a while is because dogs do enjoy chasing cats.
Yes, true. I would be interested in the conceit of a land versus air race, where the air vehicle is a supersonic jet. So, yeah. get working on that, guys. The Alaskan Hero on Twitter, Brandon House, asks, "Who is the best and/or your favorite fictional dog?"
From Lightning Dogs or just in all
fictional
general?
Dog? All fictional dog.
He means in all fiction. Who is your favorite dog?
Ooh. How has that one not come up before?
I have no idea.
That's one you kind of need
We've
to be
been at this for years, gentlemen.
Oh, boy. Fictional dog.
Oh, man.
Angela. Favorite fictional dog. And I can say this with a straight face. Angela is my.
We cannot possibly. All right, I'm saying for you, it's Odie. There, that's your choice. By not casting a vote, you've forfeited your chance. It's Odie.
Your
official answer is
Fuck
Odie.
You, Snoopy.
All right, there, Snoopy. Thank you. At least a real answer.
But really, Angela.
Let's see. He took Snoopy.
That's right. You're damn right I did. Odie's available.
Here's something unusual. Literally, the first thing that came into my mind was McGruff.
McGruff?
Yeah.
McGruff the crime dog is fantastic.
You can still write to him at 60652. If you want to. That is a post office code that is burned into my brain forever.
What other dog will tell you an address to mail stuff to, right? None other.
I'm going to kick myself because I'm going to have the perfect answer later, but I guess overall, my favorite has to be Rolf the dog. Right now, that's my answer, Rolf the dog.
He's good, I love him.
Rolf would probably be my favorite, too.
Yeah.
Hard to beat Rolf.
Why does everybody always blame dogs?
Hey, guys, Chris, remember the time you came and got me?
Chris, do you have a favorite fictional dog?
Like my instinct is to say Ace, but Ace is no Crypto, and we know that for sure. But I do like Crypto. I like Crypto an awful lot.
Well, I'm just going to tell everybody that nobody said Droopy, and so he's very sad.
Oh.
Who's, like, is there, like, a cool dog that wears a bandana? Because I do like it when dogs wear bandanas a lot.
You mean, like, the coolest dog of all time, Spuds McKenzie?
I mean, Spuds McKenzie was a dog who partied so hard that he died from partying, so.
And now he is an actual ghost in advertisements.
Or Joe Cool. That's just, you know, going that far.
That's just Snoopy in a pair of sunglasses.
That's Joe Cool.
It has been a delight having you on War Rocket Ajax. This time has just flown by talking about Lightning Dogs. Before we let you go, please tell all our listeners where they can find you on the internet.
Absolutely. You can find us at lightningdogs.com. That's our hub for all of the podcasts and everything else. You can find our podcasts wherever you find podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, The Works. Twitter, we're lightning_dogs. And we have a Patreon. That's how we're funding our efforts. Like, we're paying all the artists that are working for us. Like, we have freelancers and so on. So we've got a quest, a financial quest to help make this thing a reality. And it is a possibility.
Social media, we've got Tumblr. We have DeviantArt. What else?
Instagram.
Pretty much anywhere you want to be.
Yeah.
And let's do individual Twitter handles for you guys. Cap?
Good idea. Cap Blackard. That's CapBlackard.
Okay. Doug?
Doug V. Banks. Someone interact with me on there because I'm never on there because I have no reason to be on there. So go ahead, ask me a question for real. I want to be more active, but there's no reason to be active. So yeah, follow me.
And you can bank on that.
Yeah, bank on that.
And Tony?
I am Sketchalings. That is the word sketch, the letter A, and then lings. It's a word I came up with, and yeah, that's a thing. Hooray!
It's a sketch-a-ling thing.
No, in fact, the tagline for it is sketch-a-lings. It's a word.
Our guests for this week's show have been Cap Blackard, Doug Banks, and Tony Baldini. Absolutely go to lightningdogs.com and check it out, because we are only scratching the surface of what you are doing there in this interview. But thank you so much for joining us on the show. It has been an absolute blast.
Anytime, guys.
Thank you for having us, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And if we could, before we leave. Hashtag howl noise.
I knew you were going to say that.
Thanks once again to Cap, Doug, and Tony for joining us. Definitely check out Lightning Dogs. Matt, quick update. In the time it has taken us to record this show, I did go ahead and buy Warcraft 3.
Keep us updated. But this is not the games from, what, 10, 15
like
years
2002?
Ago?
2002? It's like from 15 years ago.
That you recently bought? This is the part of the show where we rank comic characters. It's time for Panel President. Is the segment where we elect the best comic characters and impeach the worst.
Matt, are you about to start walking the pews? You are getting the spirit, my man.
I felt like I was doing kind of an Andrew Dice Clay thing, so I gotta back off. This list of comic characters comes from Corey Norris, who has some Doctor Strange villains for us.
Quick question, Matt. Does anyone call him Cornor?
Not a question I can answer, not information given in this email.
I mean, maybe that would be like a cool, like, I don't mean that in like a meme way, I just feel like maybe that would be like a cool nickname for you. Like, I'm just tossing that out there. It could be a cool nickname.
Let's do his list of characters. The first one on his list is Baron Mordo.
Are you a Doctor Strange guy, Matt?
I like certain Doctor Strange stories. I don't like every Doctor Strange story, and it has to hook me.
Like, when you said Doctor Strange villains, I got a cold sweat. I would have a 50-50 chance of telling Baron Mordo apart from Dr. Druid. And that is real. That is real talk. Actual factual.
I don't think there's anything super special about Baron Mordo. He's bad Doctor Strange. He's Doctor Strange who wears green, and the regular Doctor Strange wears blue. And they do twirly stuff with their fingers and shoot magic at each other.
Yep. I mean, that's kind of him.
I mean, there is more to Baron Mordo than that.
I'm really excited about seeing Chiwetel Ejiofor playing Baron Mordo, like when Baron Mordo is the big villain of Doctor Strange 2, because I like Chiwetel Ejiofor. But, like, as far as the character, well, hang on. He's a Transylvanian nobleman, Matt. I just found that out.
Yeah, he is. Yes.
But, like, he's not a Dracula.
No.
Thumbs down. Thumbs down. If you're a Transylvanian wizard and you do not fight or know or hang out with Dracula, then I have no time for you.
Instead, he fucks with demons. And, I mean, that's interesting, but the demons are notably more interesting than him, right?
Does it say that in the official handbook?
Yeah.
But he fucks with demons?
Yeah, but like Dormammu is the threat of Baron Mordo, right? Like he's going to summon Dormammu. But like yes. That makes Dormammu more interesting than Baron Mordo. Baron Mordo is just a harbinger of Dormammu. It's a very the dude who is like trying to bring Viggo of Carpathia to the world in Ghostbusters 2. It's Janos. But Baron Mordo is the Janos to Dormammu's Viggo, the Carpathian.
You're not wrong. I mean, you're not like entirely right, but you're also not wrong. So I don't know. Maybe we should just read, like, because, look, I've never been a huge Doctor Strange guy. There are Doctor Strange stories that I love. Triumph and Torment, The Oath. Those are, like, stories that I really, really think are great. But, like, his roster of villains is lacking to me. Like, and maybe it's because I haven't read as much as I should.
I'll tell you where Baron Mordo goes for me. I like him more than Adam Warlock. I like him less than the Beyonder.
Hey, did you know we fucking hate Adam Warlock on this show?
You talking about him?
Talk about him. Talk about the Magus. Yeah, I cannot argue with that. Baron Mordo goes at number 141 on our list of 170 characters. Not a great showing.
No, Baron Mordo's not great. Next up on the list is Shuma Gorath.
Let's flip the script on this one. Shuma Gorath fucking rules.
The Lord of Chaos?
Shuma Gorath, who, like, Marvel created so that Marvel could have, like, a Lovecraft monster who fought Conan?
Actually, Shuma Gorath is a Conan Robert E. Howard creation, who then made his way into Marvel Comics, yes.
Wow, I thought he was, like, a Marvel, like, stand-in. Because he's in Marvel vs. Capcom, too.
Yeah.
And I do not believe they had the Conan license at the time of that game.
Somehow Shuma Gorath is still around in Marvel, even though Marvel doesn't have Conan stuff anymore. But Shuma Gorath was originally a Robert E. Howard creation.
Shuma Gorath rules. 1 to 10, how much affection do you have for Shuma Gorath?
I mean, it's pretty great. I've always wondered how much Shuma Gorath was just an attempt to have Marvel Starro, kinda.
I don't think it's Marvel. I don't think he's Marvel Starro. Although I feel like Starro became something that was more Lovecraftian in the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
That brought him closer to what Shuma Gorath always was. I just feel like I have, like, if I said 1 to 10, how much affection do I have for Shuma Gorath? It's at like 8. And 90% of that comes from Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Because here's the thing. Most fighting games do not let you play as a Chthonic being. Most fighting games do not have Chun-Li fighting the crawling chaos. And that one does.
The problem with something like Shuma Gorath, which is just a tentacle Lovecraftian monster that embodies chaos, is they can't have a personality. They can't be Mephisto. They're just mega powerful and terrifying, and that's it. So you can't get that kind of attachment to them. I mean, I like it more than Baron Mordo.
Yeah, like, I think if Shuma Gorath shows up in a story, like, if Baron Mordo, for instance, shows up in a Spider-Man story, I'd be like, oh, that's interesting. Like, Spider-Man's gonna fight Baron Mordo. If Shuma Gorath shows up in a Spider-Man story, I'm like, how's Peter gonna get out of this one?
But
like,
I am
hooked.
Yeah, but is Shuma Gorath better than, like, Mr. Mixes Pitlick? I'm going to say no.
No. Because Mr. Mixes Pitlick was Lovecraftian before it was cool.
Yeah.
People just didn't realize it. And nothing needed ever be changed.
Is it better than Mandrake the Dark Monitor?
Okay, I think Mandrake the Dark Monitor is where we need to draw the line. Like, either just above or just below.
I'm going to say just below Mandrake the Dark Monitor.
Again, I cannot really disagree with you, but I do want it on the record that I do fucking love Shuma Gorath.
Next on Corey's list is, I don't know, this might be a split decision, Mephisto.
You like Mephisto.
I do like Mephisto, but Mephisto is always a means to an end. Mephisto shows up in stories so that he can rewrite some reality or do some devil shit. Like, he's Marvel's devil, right?
Yeah, that he fucks with demons and he does some devil shit. You are on some word choice tonight, my dude.
But, I mean, it's right, right? Like, he's there to make deals. Mephisto is the deal maker.
Mephisto works as a devil figure in comics in a way that a lot of devil figures don't. Like, Mephisto's better than... I feel like Mephisto's better than Neron. I feel like Mephisto's better than Satanish or Blaze and Satanus. I feel like the only, like, you know, devil figure that's as good as Mephisto, and better than Mephisto, really, is Hela.
Yeah.
Because Hela's great.
Well, but see, the character that's more in line with who Mephisto is Loki. Because Mephisto is a trickster as much as Loki is.
Well, is he a trickster or is he a technician?
he's a schemer. He's a deal maker. He's I think that's what makes Mephisto appealing, is that he's not a brute force devil figure.
Yeah, I mean, like, think about Mephisto showing up in Infinity Gauntlet and being like, oh, you know, Thanos, you're so cool. Like, you know, you got all this power. And all the time he's plotting. Like, all the time he's just waiting for Thanos to turn his back for a second after he gets those Infinity Gems.
And he can be used to great effect in stories like that one, or in stories like Doctor Doom, Doctor Strange, Triumph and Torment.
Yeah, he's really good in that.
Yeah, but he's also the driving force behind One More Day, where he is strictly a plot device.
I mean, that is true. There's really no getting around that one. I would say, and I have said this before, I feel like One More Day is a disservice to a lot of characters.
Sure.
And I feel like Mephisto is one of them. Like, we don't judge Batman by Identity Crisis, you know? We don't even judge Batman by Dark Knight Strikes Again.
And we don't judge Spider-Man and Mary Jane by One More Day either. So, I mean, I think Mephisto can rank pretty high on the list. I like Mephisto as a devil figure character.
Mephisto has a track record in that he has been in the Daredevil story, where Daredevil goes and rides the subway train down to hell. That's a fucking awesome story. Mephisto's in Infinity Gauntlet, which is awesome. Mephisto's in that, you know, like, three-way war in hell story with Hela that is fairly recent and is, like, still really good. Like, Mephisto's in a ton of Ghost Rider shit that's actually not bad, even though people don't go back and read it because it's from the 90s. Like, Mephisto's done some good stories.
Okay, better or worse than Prometheus?
I like Prometheus better. Before Prometheus came back in Midnighter, I would give it to Mephisto, but not new Prometheus.
Well, then I would put him right below Prometheus.
Can we move him between Monet and Boom Boom?
Sure, yes.
Then I think Mephisto goes on the list at number 103.
Okay.
You know, Blackheart's dad.
That's right. Next on Corey's list is Umar the Unrelenting.
No idea who that is.
She's
is that that's Dormammu's sister.
Yes.
I've only read one story with Umar, and it was that Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, Kevin Maguire Defender story, where she's quite good, but she's, you know, she's a jokey joke. Like a little fun time goofer.
She hasn't held up as a character all that well. And I actually feel a little unsure about ranking her, so we might have to put her on the shelf for now.
Yeah, she's one that I would actually like to revisit, because I like the idea. I like the idea behind Umar.
The thing is, like, she's a good idea, but she's just a pretty dark-haired lady with some powers. And her brother Dormammu has a fire head.
Okay, true. He does. You know, it is. Umar is kind of the exact example of, like, the gender discrepancy in, like, character design, right? Like, when you see, like, you know, like, here's a bunch of I've got dogs on the brain because we just talked to the Lightning Dogs guys. But, you know, like in cartoons when you have, like, cat people and, like, the guy cats are just cats in, like, jackets. But the lady cats have, like, long hair and like lipstick and boobs. Like, Umar is that because her brother is on fire.
Yeah.
Like, her brother is a fireman.
And she's just a lady. All right, we're going to put we're going to put Umar aside for now.
If you have an Umar recommendation, hit us up.
Yeah.
Good or bad.
And closing out Corey's list is the fire-headed man that we've been talking about, the Dread Dormammu.
I like Dormammu a lot.
He's the Lord of the Dark Dimension.
He's the Lord of the Dark Dimension. He's on fire. Matt, who bosses around the mindless ones?
That would be Dormammu.
Yeah, yeah. But once you're in charge of the mindless ones...
In practice, he kind of sucks. But he gets by with so much just based on his look. Like, we talked about him being a fireman with a fire head. And because he has that great look, he has that great design, he is instantaneously threatening.
He is the classic Marvel Comics mystical villain. His name is the Dread Dormammu. Like, he's the Mephisto you can beat, right? So,
he's always trapped in his dimension until, you know, certain artifacts are gathered. Like, that's what Baron Mordo is around for, right?
I think the appeal of Dormammu is that he's fucking goofy, right? Because he simultaneously gets to be a towering monster made of fire, but then he's also just a dude made of fire whose sister is just like a normal-ass beautiful lady.
And that Doctor Strange can beat. Like, you can root for Doctor Strange to defeat Dormammu.
He's the cosmic villain you can beat. He's the Mephisto you can beat. He's the, like, you know, weird cosmic force from another dimension that actually is fairly easy to beat. The fact that he's not threatening makes him, like, a really fun character, right? Like he can show up and just, like, send the mindless ones out and, like, whatever. He's not gonna, you know, it doesn't matter if he loses. Like, it's all about, like, what he does while he's here. And I think that's a really cool character trait. We've talked about Arcade kind of having that kind of sense to him, where it doesn't really matter if he loses. And I think Dormammu's in that bulletproof gimmick
yeah.
that can always work.
So do we like him more or less than Mephisto?
I like him more than Mephisto. I think he losing hurts Mephisto. Although they've done a really good job of protecting Mephisto in that when he loses, he still kind of wins. But Dormammu, like, he can lose all the time and it doesn't matter. He's always going to be, like, scary and he's always going to be kind of goofy. So it's fine.
Yeah.
So I think he's a more versatile character than Mephisto for sure.
Okay. What about Prometheus? Do you think he goes above Prometheus?
He's not as good as Prometheus. Prometheus has a CD-ROM drive in his head, Matt. I don't know if you know that.
Okay, so either he's going just above Mephisto, mm-hmm. above M, or above Chamber.
Well, M is rich and her name is Money.
That's true.
Her name is Money.
All right, let's
pronounce differently, but her name is Money. So
let's put Dormammu right above Mephisto.
So Dormammu enters the list at number 103. That is the Dread Dormammu, the Lord of Chaos, the Great Enigma, the Eater of Souls, and the Master of the Mindless Ones.
And that's
Mindless
do
Ones
it.
Would be like top 10 material on this list. Just heads up, so everybody knows that.
That's going to do it for this panel president segment. Thank you, Corey, for that list. If you would like to send in a panel president list or an Every Story Ever list or a question or a comment, or if you want to sponsor the show, email us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. Also, check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Go leave us a review on iTunes if you like the show, please. The more reviews we get on iTunes that are positive, the more we are featured there. And now we're going to tell you where you can find us individually on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net and you can find links to all my stuff. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
Everybody can find links to the stuff that I do at the-isb.com. That is my homepage. And it's important to have a homepage on the internet these days. You can find links to the comics that I write on Comixology, like my author page is there, as well as you can pick up the hard copies on Amazon. Plus, there's links to the other podcasts I do, like Sailor Business, like Xena Business, and all the columns that I write at Comics Alliance, like the current recaps of Riverdale, which is a show that is bonkers.
As has become tradition in 2017, we're going to leave you with a recommendation for a charity that you can go help out. The charity that we're offering up this time is Lambda Legal. Now, we've talked about other organizations that legally support various groups like the ACLU or the SPLC. Lambda Legal is specifically a national organization that is working to legally have the civil rights of people in the LGBTQ community recognized. And also they're focusing on preserving the rights of people with HIV. You can go to lambdalegal.org. That's L-A-M-B-D-A, like the Greek letter, and then the word legal, .org. You could go donate to help them out there. They're going to be working very hard in the very near future. Please go help them out if that's something that's close to your heart like it is to ours.
Yeah, and I also wanted to just give a quick shout-out to WFMU, the freeform radio station that I am a huge fan of and have been a huge fan of. They are having their annual marathon. They're entirely listener-supported. It's pretty clear that Matt and I believe that independent media is important. But WFMU it's a radio station, and you can find it at WFMU.org, and they put up so much stuff online, streaming worldwide for free, that you really ought to check out. Like, it's the reason we have Tom Sharpling. So if you've got a lot to throw around, there's a lot of good causes out there. But that'll do it for us. This has been War Rocket Ajax number 342. Matt, dare I ask, I feel like we had some tension at the top of the show. Did we still pull it out? Did we manage to achieve an A rank?
Chris, I'm looking at the reports now. The reports are being compiled. And it's printing out now. B minus. No, I'm kidding. What? It's S-rank. I'm kidding.
Oh, you had me going, Matt. You really had me going. I got legitimately worried, which is weird.
Bye, everybody. We love you.
Yeah!
Flash. Hey, Flash! From this day on.
Hashtag pound sign hell noise. What now, Doug?
They don't get that. That's an in-joke from like months ago that hasn't been public yet. It's whatever. You'll hear it yourselves.
It's a future in-joke they can get on the ground floor. That isn't the ground floor.
By hearing the punchline before the setup?